Nothing lights us up more than helping people grow their wealth through multifamily investing in a way that actually feels good and makes sense where they are right now. That's exactly why we created the Where Am I Now Multifamily Assessment.
Here's the thing, no two journeys ever look the same. Maybe you're just starting out and simply curious about what's possible. Maybe you're dipping your toes into your really first passive investment, or maybe you're craving that behind the scenes peek at how it all works.
You might even be gearing up to go big and acquire your first deal, or ready to scale your portfolio to new heights by teaming up with strong partners who can help you grow like never before.
Instead of tossing you one size fits all advice, boring and not helpful, this assessment zooms in on your exact stage of growth.
It helps us get to know your goals, your challenges, and what gets you most excited about building wealth through multifamily investing, so we can hand over the tools, resources, and support that actually moves the needle for you.
The best part? It only takes a few minutes, but the clarity you walk away with, that's the magic. Think of it as your roadmap to what's next.
Ready? Head to kittysisters.com/whereaminow to get started. That's kittysisters.com/whereaminow.
All my life, I heard this lie. Buying a home is the ultimate American dream. But here's what nobody told us. Owning a home can be one of the easiest ways to stay broke for the rest of your life. And because nobody warned us, most people walk right into the trap, eyes wide open. Today, I'm going to show you how the so-called $500,000 dream home can quietly rob you of $1.5 million.
Hello, I'm Pommy.
And I'm Nancy.
Together, we make the Kitty Sisters. We're apartment syndicators, entrepreneurs, and educators with big dreams and a $300 million multifamily apartment portfolio. We're into helping successful entrepreneurs and founders who have a passion for real estate and $100K to $5 million to invest, all aiming to turn their business profits into a lasting legacy through income-producing asset investment. This is Cashflow Multipliers, a podcast dedicated to your financial freedom and the lifestyle you deserve.
Now, understand something. I love real estate. I own $400 million worth of it. But here's the truth. Not all real estate is created equal. And right now, you might be thinking, wait, Pommy, what do you mean by that? Let me break it down. In 2025, home prices haven't just gone up. The true cost of ownership has exploded by over 300%. And that's not just because of the sticker price. That, of course, has been climbing steadily for years. No, it's everything they don't show you. They don't show you what happens after you sign on the dotted line. They don't show you the bleeding that starts, not with one big check, but with the slow, steady drip. Fees, taxes, interest, repairs, lost opportunities. And the worst part, the biggest trap of all, after you think you've won, I'm going to break it all down and show you the hidden part almost no one talks about. The part that could quietly drain your freedom, your finances, and your future. Stick with me to the end, because once you see this, you can never look at home ownership the same way again. And I get it. I understand why home ownership is so deeply wired in our minds. It's not just a house, it's a home. A home feels like warmth, pride, family legacy. It's where your child took their first steps, where you celebrate birthdays and anniversaries, where memories get baked into the walls. And here's what you've got to understand. That feeling you crave, it's not coming from granite countertops. It's not coming from mortgage paperwork. It comes from moments, from memories, from a sense of safety, of belonging. And none of that requires a 30-year debt contract to achieve. When I first moved to the United States, we moved around a lot, from preschool to first grade. I remember we probably moved around 5 times. First, we stayed with friends, and then a house full of 8 or 9 people, and then another place in Hollywood, and then another place in East LA, until we finally settled into an apartment on Menlo Street. The apartment was small. It smelled. They had roaches. The property manager lived there for free in exchange for fixing broken things himself. And yet, that was the first place that I felt like home. We were there for 5 years, from 2nd grade to 6th grade, longer than we've ever stayed anywhere since moving to this country. There was a rhythm to life, a sense of community, even if it was messy or imperfect, even if the neighborhood didn't feel safe, even if there's sirens and helicopters echoing through the nights. As a kid, I didn't know any different. I thought the roaches was part of the package deal. I never dreamed of a house because that was just life. Maybe my parents dreamed of something more, right? Something stable, urban, protected. And maybe that's part of the lure of homeownership. Not the investments, not the asset, but the promise that your family is finally safe, finally settled. And that's a beautiful dream. But it's also why the financial side is so important to understand. Because when we confuse emotional safety with financial logic, that's a recipe for catastrophe. And it's why so many of us walk eyes wide open into what is arguably one of the most dangerous financial traps of our generation. generation. Because the emotional weight of the dream is so heavy, we stop asking whether it actually makes sense. We confuse emotional warmth with financial wisdom. We assume the only path to security is through a mortgage, and the only path to wealth is through equity, and that renting is throwing money away, when in reality, ownership might be throwing your freedom away. And so let's break it down. No emotion, just math. Imagine you buy a $500,000 house. You put in 20% down payment. That's $100,000 cash that might have taken you a decade to save. You're financed the remaining $400,000 at today's rate, let's say 7.5% interest, over 30 years. Your monthly mortgage payment is around $2,797, just mortgage, no interest, no property tax. Now, here's what the home actually costs you over time. Mortgage interest, you're paying around $606,869 in interest to the bank over 30 years. That's more than 150% of your original loan amount, just for the privilege of borrowing money. What about property tax? So property tax, let's say it's 1.25% annually. That's $6,250 per year, or $187,500 over 30 years. Homeowners insurance at $2,000 per year, that adds up to $60,000. Maintenance and repair, usually this is the one that is least understood, and the estimate standard is around 1% of home value per year. That's $5,000 annually, or $150,000 over 30 years. Selling fees, realtor commissions. If the home appreciates to $650,000, and if you're paying 6% in commission, that's $39,000 in agent commission when you sell. All that equals to $1,043,369. Okay, so that's a lot of money already. But how about adding the actual cost of the home? $500,000, right? $1.5 million. That's the total. So no, you didn't buy a $500,000 house. You bought a $1.5 million cash drain liability disguised as a dream. And for most people, the dream doesn't come with freedom. It comes with a second job that you can't quit called home ownership. But it gets worse because of very expensive dirt beneath your feet, the land we were told would double in value every decade, that magical soil that supposedly builds generational wealth, that dirt is a trap. Because once your money goes into the property, it stops being money. It becomes equity. And equity isn't liquid. It's not accessible and is definitely not flexible. In fact, equity might be the most expensive kind of savings you can have. Because guess what? It's locked in behind walls, behind paperwork, behind bank policies. You can't touch it without borrowing your own money back from the bank, paying interest on what you already earned, already taxed, and already invested. It's like paying to bury your own treasure chest. And imagine people who paid off their mortgage early because they wanted to be financially free. What they didn't realize is that every extra dollar that they throw in their house is a dollar that they're losing somewhere else. It's not compounding in the market. It's not generating cash flow. It's not buying freedom. It's buying dead capital. Yes, you reduce your monthly obligation, but at what cost? That extra $1,000 or $2,000 a month you're throwing at the mortgage early, what could that money be doing in a rental property, private investment, a business? And then as if it couldn't get any worse, what happens when you get older? Let's say you own the home free and clear after 30 years, but you don't have strong income anymore because you retired. So now you actually don't qualify for a loan. You're asset rich, but cash poor. You're sitting on $500,000 plus of wealth that you can't spend unless you, guess what? What do? Unless you're forced to sell the home you love and they pay capital gains tax on the profit, even though you already paid tax on the income, on the money that you use on the down payment. And again, every dollar you use to make the mortgage payments. Or maybe try accessing your equity through a HELOC, a home equity line of credit. On paper, it sounds smart. Is this borrowing against my house if I ever need cash? True, but here's the problem. A HELOC isn't free money. It's actually new debt with variable interest, payment obligations, and no guarantees. You're borrowing your own money and you're paying the bank's interest for the privilege of doing so. That's like planting your own tree, watering it for 10 years, and then being charged to pick the fruit. And here's the fine details that the bank don't tell you. Because HELOCs are discretionary credit, meaning the bank can reduce your limit, freeze your access, or cancel it altogether. And guess when they tend to do that? When you actually need the money the most. During market downturns, job loss, or economic crisis, banks routinely freeze HELOCs, cutting off access to your own equity exactly when you need it most. So the idea that you just tap into your home's value later is a myth. It's a promise that only works if the economy cooperates, if your credit stays perfect, and if the bank feels like saying yes. Which means your so-called safety net might vanish the moment you try to use it. Or maybe you fall into the reverse mortgage trap. A product market as peace of mind, aging in place, or living off your home equity. But here's what they don't say out loud. A reverse mortgage isn't free money. It's a loan against your home, one that grows larger over time while your equity quietly shrinks. Yes, you stay in your home. Yes, you stop making monthly mortgage payments. But behind the scenes, interest and fees are compounding every single day, eating away at the value of your home like termites behind the drywall. And when you pass away or move out, the peace of mind turns into a payday for the lender, not your family, not your heirs. Your heirs may end up having to sell the home to pay off the reverse mortgage. balance. And if the property has lost value or the loan has ballooned past expectations, your legacy could be wiped out. The tough thing about home equity is that you can't break off a piece of it. You can't just say, hey, I don't need it all. I just need $30,000 to pay for surgery or $80,000 to help with my kid's tuition. Nope. You're either selling the whole house or you're jumping through financial hoops, paying closing and fees just an extra portion of your money. It's like saving for decades in a piggy bank that requires a loan officer's approval and a credit score to break open. That's a trap no one warns you about. And you think you're building equity so you have access to it when you need it. But the system is built to trap the equity and then charge you interest to get it back. If you think that's bad, wait until you learn about the most dangerous part. And here's the part that stings the most. Even after everything we talked about, the hidden cost, the equity trap, and the loss of equity, we're still held to buy. We're still told owning a home is always better than renting. Not sometimes, not if it fits your situation, always. Because it's not just financial advice, it becomes cultural gossip. You've heard the line, don't rent, you're just paying someone else's mortgage. Buy a house, it's the best investment you'll ever make. Renting is throwing money away. But here's the truth, that advice was built for a world that doesn't exist anymore. It was written in a time when homes cost 2.5 times your salary, not 10x. You could buy a house on a single income. Mortgage rates were 3%. Property taxes were low. Insurance were predictable and cheap. You didn't need $100,000 cash just to compete with 12 other offers. Fast forward to today, in most major metros, home prices are 8 to 10 times the average income. Mortgage rates have more than doubled since 2022. Down payments are six figures. Bidding wars are normal. And most terrifying of all, your home might not even be insurable anymore. You see, there's a new phenomenon happening and most people haven't seen it yet, but it's coming fast. It's called the insurance squeeze and it's already reshaping the entire landscape of home ownership. Here's what's happening. In many areas of the United States, especially high-risk disaster zones like coastal California, Florida, and part of the Midwest, insurance premiums have skyrocketed. In some places, they've doubled or tripled in just the last few years. And the scariest part, in some areas, insurance companies have pulled out completely. That's right, they're not just raising rates, they're leaving the state altogether. In California, major for-profit insurers like State Farm and Allstate have either stopped issuing new policies or completely exited the market for homeowners. And if you can still get a policy, it may not cover the full value of your home. It may have exclusion for wildfires or earthquakes. It may cost tens of thousands of dollars per year. And this isn't just a theory, it's already happening. Earlier this year in Southern California, we learned something terrifying. There are multi-million dollar homes in Malibu, in Beverly Hills, in Pacific Palisades, entire neighborhoods filled with $5, $10, or even $40 million homes that no longer have any insurance coverage. And the tragedy is some of those policies were canceled months before the LA wildfire leveled entire communities. Gone, pipe melted, power lines down, restaurants, groceries, billboards, and families who owned their homes for 40 years left with nothing. No insurance payout, no way to rebuild, no safety net. And here's the hard truth. The risk falls entirely on the homeowner. Because as a renter, while it's devastating to lose your home, you can leave, you can relocate, you can pivot. Your risk exposure is capped. You're not responsible for rebuilding. You're not responsible for infrastructure. You're not waiting for an insurer to decide whether or not to make you whole. You have mobility, and more importantly, you have options. That's why in areas like Dallas-Fort Worth, where we're building communities today, we see a different picture. No earthquake risk, minimal wildfire zones, lower flood exposure, and most importantly, stable, affordable insurance markets. Renting in this area allows you to keep your costs predictable, risk minimal, and your capital free to work elsewhere. But when you own in a high-risk zone, you're betting your future on a for-profit insurer's willingness to keep showing up. And they're telling us loud and clear they won't. So what's the alternative? So now you're probably asking the question that matters most. If owning a home today is such a financial minefield, what should I do instead? And that's a smart question. Because this isn't just about poking holes in an old playbook. It's about giving you a better one. Because when the rules change, make no mistake, and they have, the winners are the ones who stop clinging to outdated advice and start thinking like investors. Let's be clear, I'm not anti-home ownership. I'm anti-bad math. I'm anti-sleepwalking into a 30-year contract out of emotional pressure. I'm anti-pretending a liability is an asset just because your parents said so. I'm anti-believing that rent makes you a fairer when maybe it's the smartest wealth move you can make. So let's talk about what smart money is doing right now, not based on nostalgia, not based on fear, but based on math, leverage, and real-world strategy. Number one, turn your down payment into real passive income. Most people take their $100,000 in savings and pour it into a primary residence or a single-family rental property. It feels safe, familiar, the responsible thing to do. We know because we did the same thing back in 2013. We bought our very first rental property in California. It was a four-bedroom, single-story home with a pool and a view. It was perfect. At first, we actually thought we might live there ourselves, but plans changed and we decided to rent it out instead. It actually sat vacant for 6 months while we were juggling other responsibilities and trying to short ourselves. Eventually, he found a tenant, a middle-aged man named Ron, who declared bankruptcy a few months before, who worked with his dad and promised it would be just him, his wife, and two kids. No one mentioned the grandkids or the other son. Within weeks of moving in, the complaints started. Then comes the missed rent. The excuse, everything under the sun, from my dad hasn't cut the check, oh boy, to it's Christmas and I had to buy presents, to I went to Vegas for my birthday. Then COVID hit and we panicked. Our tenant was months behind. Eviction protection was in full swing and we were stuck bleeding cash with no leverage because this is in California and tenant laws heavily favors renters. We were already charging below market rent, getting paid late, if at all, and worst of all, we sunk $345,000 into this property. Eventually, we convinced the tenant to leave and sold the house for a small profit. But here's what hurts the most. Guys, we ran the numbers. Had we taken that same $345,000 and invested into a multifamily syndication instead, just one or two deals managed by experienced operators, we would have turned that into millions of dollars over the same period of time because the market condition back then was optimal. $200,000 in profit that we made from selling the house is nice, not gonna lie. But it's nowhere near the amazing $3.6 million plus that we would have gotten instead. Instead, we locked up our capital in a money pit that drained our energy, cost endless stress, and barely move the needle financially. Today, we live the operating costs, and it's brutal. Here's a smarter alternative. Now, even if the returns today aren't as juicy as back in 2020, it's still exceptional compared to the money pit of home ownership. Using your 100K savings to buy into a fractional ownership stake in a professionally managed multifamily syndication, guess what happens to your money? So instead of one home, one tenant, one source of income, and every problem on your shoulders, you now own a piece of a $10 to $20 million apartment complex, giving you 7 to 8% annual cash flow with quarterly distribution, appreciation upside from forced value and improvements, tax sheltered gains via depreciation and bonus depreciation. With $100,000 invested, you could conceivably receive $583 monthly in passive cash flow, that 7% cash flow, participating equity upside on the sale. If that deal hits 2x multiple in 5 years, including the cash flow, you're looking at doubling your money from 100K to 200K. No tenants, no toilets, no termites, no stress. You're not the landlord. You're not the primary homeowner that's paying all the bill. You're a limited partner. Your money is working harder than you can. The key lesson, don't fall for the myth that owning one rental or one home is building wealth. If we had known back then what we know now, we would have built a portfolio of passive investments that created freedom in abundance, not gray hairs and legal fees. Now you can. Number two, turn your rent savings into scalable wealth built to rent strategy. So let's say renting your home costs $3,000 per month, but owning a home hypothetically may cost you $6,500 a month. That's a $3,500 per month surplus or $42,000 per year. You now have the power to invest, not burn it on a mortgage. Now imagine putting that into a built-to-rent or BTR community, new construction rental neighborhoods built to attract long-term tenants and institutional buyers. For example, if we targeted a 20% average annual return, which is including both the consistent cash flow and also appreciation from lease-up, operations, and a strong exit strategy, right? What does that look like in 5 years? It looks like $42,000 per year invested at 20% annual average return, you'll end up with approximately $312,500 in value in 5 years. This is all from rent savings that you would have otherwise had into the bank, the tax assessors, and your insurance company. So you want to go a little bit further. So for example, on our property, if we choose to sell at 5 years, you can see the benefits, right? You may be saying, okay, can we push this a little bit further? In our example, if we choose to hold the property instead of selling at 5 years, you could also benefit from tax-free cash out refinancing, returning a large chunk of your capital back to you without selling, without tax, and while continuing to earn passive income. This is what it looks like to build wealth strategically. Just scaling tax-efficient ownership of real assets that grow over time. No landlord eggs, just passive ownership in large-scale multifamily run by expert operators. And here's where it gets even more powerful. So you could recoup 50 to 75% of your original investment tax-free as part of the cash out refinancing, still keep your ownership stake, and continue to receive passive cash flow. Ride the long-term upside as rents and property value rise. And this is how rent savings can become seven figures in real wealth, not by throwing money away, but by strategically compounding it through institutional-grade real estate. You're not just avoiding the cost of bad primary residence, you're using the system to build generational wealth. So number three, use housing as a lifestyle choice, not an investment. If after all I've said so far, you say, Palm, I still want to buy a home. Fair enough. Then the key here is to make sure that you understand the true cost and know that you're not making an investment, that this is a lifestyle choice. Stop thinking of your home as a wealth building strategy. Your primary residence is not an investment. It's not a stock. It doesn't produce income. It costs money. It's a lifestyle choice. Here's what I want you to remember. You don't have to trade your dreams for a mortgage. You don't have to lock your freedom behind bricks and debt. You don't have to do what your parents did just because it worked for them in a different economy. You can choose a new path, one that gives you mobility, liquidity, and leverage. One that lets your money multiply, not just sit still in a house you can't spend. Because wealth isn't built by owning one expensive roof over your head. Wealth is built by owning the roofs over other people's heads and getting paid every single month to do so. So here's your next move. Start thinking like an investor. Look for assets that pay you, not just impress your neighbors, and build a portfolio that funds your lifestyle instead of one that drains it.
We can't wait to begin this journey with you. Check us out at thekittysisters.com/podcast.